Hello. Welcome to our verse-by-verse in-depth Bible study with Bible teacher Dr. Bob Utley. Now, here's Bob.
Oh, we're going to be in Genesis 27 today. I think there's been a lot of misunderstanding here. There's been some prejudice shown in commentaries. You know, sometimes Jacob's name, of course, means overreacher or supplanter or trickster, something like that. And he's come across as a real turkey in this account. But I want to give you another perspective, and I want you to at least think about this. It is obvious that every person in chapter 27 has some guilt involved in the way they're acting. There is some parental favoritism. Isaac likes Esau, Rebekah likes Jacob. That always causes a problem. There is a sense in which Jacob has treated his brother somewhat unfairly in the idea of the birthright back in chapter 25, verses 27 through 24. But I want you to know Esau sold his birthright because it didn't mean that much to him. Jacob was really concerned with it. Why? Well, I think you got to put chapter 27 in light of God's revelation to Rebekah back in chapter 25, 34. 25:23. Listen to this. And the Lord said to her, two nations are in your womb, and two people shall be separated from your body. And one people shall be stronger than the other, and the older shall serve the younger. God gave His will on the line of the Messiah. Now, isn't it interesting that in these early chapters of Genesis, it's never the firstborn son. It's always the second. In Jacob, it's going to be even further down that. Third, I think. Why? Well, friends, it goes back to the central truth that that's been presented to us in different ways, and that is God doesn't use human resources. It's His plan. It's His initiative. It's His choice. It's His purposes. And it's not man. So every way, God has been depreciating the normal way humans would do things, either through miracle, through supernatural circumstances, or here, who would naturally become one who was the head of the favored nation, the sense of chosen for service. But it's never the firstborn. That's going to be true here. Now, you might want to see Hebrews 12, verses 16 and 17, that tells a lot about the attitude of Esau. You say, how do you think a New Testament author knew? Because I think they're inspired. They understood what God was trying to say here because the Spirit revealed it to them. So I think we have to take that into consideration. And when you do, Rebekah and Jacob don't come off so evil or conniving as they usually do. The real problem was Isaac and Esau. Isaac had a favorite. Isaac knew the will of God but wasn't going to follow it. He was going to try to bless Esau anyway. Now, I agree Jacob did it in kind of a turkey way. But it still was the will of God that Jacob be the lion and not Esau. It was predicted, and Isaac just ignored it. Now, it came about when Isaac was old. Now, there's some question about how old is he. Well, Luther says he's 137, and that seems to be about right when you compare these following scriptures. Genesis 47:9 with Genesis 41:46. With Genesis 31:38, with Genesis 25:26, you seem to get 137. Now, we learn from Genesis 35:28 that he's not going to die until he's 180. So, he's worried about dying 40 years before he dies. That sounds like some folks I know. He was sick. He was going blind. He was apparently in the bed. So the quality of life had certainly diminished. Some think the reason he says, I'm going to die, I don't know how I'm going to live in verse 2. We learn from another passage, let me see if I have written it down here, that, it'll be in your notes. Ishmael died, Isaac's brother, Ishmael died at 137. That's how old Isaac was. He was getting worried because his health was so bad. Now, listen to what happens. His eyes were growing dim. Isn't it funny that Jacob's eyes was also bad? I'll say funny. I mean, unusual that it occurred this much. Genesis 48:10. And Eli, remember Eli, whose sons were so wicked in 1 Samuel 3:2? His eyes were bad. I think we see in the Orient, there was a tendency to start eye problems. I think that's what Paul had, too. He could not see, and he called his older son Esau and said to him, "My son," and he said, "Here am I." Here's that standard kind of response we saw in Abraham. And Isaac said, "Behold, now I am old, and I do not know the day of my death." He's nervous about dying, though he's going to live almost 40 years more. "Now then, please take your gear and your quiver and your bow and go out in the field and hunt game for me and prepare a savory dish for me such as I love and bring it to me that I may eat so my soul may bless you before I die." Now Isaac is doing a couple of things presumptuously. First of all, God hadn't told him to do this. He's just thinking he's getting old. Second, he picked the wrong boy. God had told him through Rebekah back in 25:23 it was going to be Jacob. And here either Isaac has forgotten or he wanted to forget. He just was favorite toward Esau. Now, this idea about go and get some game. People say, well, why would he say that before he blessed him? Well, maybe there's something here of the Oriental practice of a covenant being formed over a meal. Or maybe Isaac just liked a wild game. I don't know what it was. Now, look at in verse 5. "And Rebekah was listening." Now, first of all, Rebekah should not have had her ear at the flap of the tent. She's just being a little too nosy here. Now, one or two things are happening. She's nosy because Rebekah was nosy, or she's nosy because she knows her husband and her older son that they're not willing to give God the credit for picking what boy is going to be the lion. Now, Jacob apparently was a herdsman, and Esau was a hunter and a man of the field. And Isaac had a tendency toward Esau. Now, maybe Rebekah knew all this. Rebekah was listening anyway. "And when Isaac spoke to his son, so Esau went to the field to hunt game for bring home. Rebekah said to her son Jacob, 'Behold, I've heard your father speak to your brother Esau, saying, bring me some game and prepare a savory dish for me that I may eat and bless you in the presence of the Lord before my death.'" Now, friends, this "in the presence of the Lord" shows the significance of this patriarchal blessing. These people believed in a power of the spoken word. I think you can see it in Genesis 1, where God speaks and things happen. You can see it in Isaiah 55:11, where God says, "My word does not go out from me void." These patriarchs spoke this special blessing in the name and the presence and by the prompting of God. It was a prophecy as well as a passing on of the mantle of the chosenness. And so Rebekah knew what he was talking about. Jacob knew because he had already dealt with Esau about the birthright earlier. Now, verse 8. "Now therefore, my son, listen to me and do as I command you. Go to the flock and bring me from there two choice kids, and I'll prepare them a savory dish for your father, such as he loves." Some commentators say Rebekah was mad because her husband thought that her oldest son was a better cook than she. I was reading too much in here. She knew how to cook well enough that she's going to make two goats taste like wild meat. She knew after being married 90 years, this old boy, what kind of food he liked. She knew how to do it. She's going to do it. Going to cook the meat for him. Apparently she had cooked goat many times and Isaac had thought it was wild meat because she knew what she was doing. "And you shall bring it to your father that he may eat so that he may bless you before his death." This is Rebekah's plan now. And God's the one that told Rebekah it should be Jacob. I think we're reading too much. We make Rebekah and Jacob connivers. They seem to be following the will of God where Isaac and Esau weren't. "Then you shall bring it to your father. He may eat and bless you before your death." Jacob answered his mother, "Behold, Esau, my brother, is a hairy man." Well, look back in chapter 25, verse 25. When they were born, Esau had a lot of hair when he was born. And he continued. And Isaac was a very smooth man, very different boys. And so it was obvious here. "Perhaps my father will feel me, and then I shall be a deceiver in his sight." Now, this word deceiver, I think a better word, and it's in the margin of the New International Version, the New American Standard Bible, is the word mocker. Now, we see that in 2 Chronicles 36:16, where this Hebrew word is used, and I think it sets the meaning. Jacob would say, he would think I'm making fun of him, and he'll curse me instead of bless me. And Rebekah said, "Son, if that happens, let the curse be on me and not on you." But that's a strong statement. Because I think Rebekah knew she was following the command of God years earlier. You say, how earlier? We think that Jacob was over 70 years old. He had never married, apparently. 70 years old. My goodness. "Let your curse be on me. Only obey my voice." So he went and got them and brought them to his mother, and she made this savory dish. Now, Rebekah took the best garments that Esau had. Esau was already married, we learn. But he apparently had some of his festival garments kept in his father's tent or father's house. We're not sure if they were nomadic still or had some kind of settled existence. But she took these best clothes. And apparently, since Isaac couldn't see, there's a smell about this boy. Maybe some kind of the herbs of the field. Maybe he walked through the grass and got the smell of spring or herbs on him, but his clothes smell like him. Okay? You and I know when one faculty goes, the others increase. So Isaac had a good smell and a good sense of touch, and they're going to play on that now. So she put the skins, put these clothes of Esau on him, put the skins of these kids. Now, a goat in America would have a course, but in the ancient Near East, these goats were black skinned, and the hair of these goats was very fine, like human hair. They had just been killed, the skins were soft and pliable, and they put it around his neck and on his forearm, down on his hands, okay? You say, well, this is trickery. Well, you can see it trickery if you want to, or you can see it performing the will of God despite Isaac's reluctance to do it. I chose to see it that way. And he came to his father and said, my father, and he said, here am I. Who are you, my son? And Jacob said to his father, I am Esau, your firstborn, and I have done as you told me. Get up, please, and eat of my game that you may bless me. Now, Jacob's lying, ain't no question, but the birthright was his. The promise was his. He still's doing it in a way it's unfortunate, but whatever, he's doing it that way. Now, these are imperatives. Later on, when Esau come back, he doesn't use imperatives. So Jacob was being kind of sharp with his father here, but whether there's anything to it or not, we can't tell. Let's see. And Isaac said to his son, how is it that you have it so quickly, my son? And Jacob said, because the Lord your God caused it to happen to me. And you say, boy, some commentators say this is blasphemy, using the covenant name for God and a lie. Well, you know, I can see where they're coming from, but the truth is, I think God did do this. I think God did put it in Rebekah's heart because he's the one that told Rebekah it was going to be Jacob, not Esau. I think God did provide the wife to hear what was happening. And Jacob was apparently concerned and interested in this birthright because back in chapter 25, he bought it from his brother. So I think there's more here than just Jacob lying in the name of God. He does believe God's involved. He sees a purpose for his life, sees it in prophecy, felt in his own heart. And so here it's worked out. And Isaac said to Jacob, please come close that I may feel you, my son, whether you are really my son Esau or not. You see, his voice kind of sounded like Esau, but not exactly. His father knew it. Now, since a little later on, Esau is going to say the very same words that Jacob says here. Some say that Jacob was even copying his brother's idiomatic speech. Maybe true, but Jacob caught enough that he wanted to smell him and feel him and make sure, okay? And so he's going to do that. Verse 25, so he said, bring it to me, and I will eat my son's game, that I may bless you. And he brought it to him, and he ate it, and he also brought him the wine, and he drank. And his father Isaac said, please come close and kiss me, my son. Isaac wants to feel him, still thinks there's something wrong here. So he came close and kissed him, and he smelled the smell of his garments, and he said, now here's the blessing in 27 and following. Here it is. See, the smell of my son is like the smell of the field, the hunter, which the Lord has blessed. Okay? Agricultural blessing is going to be the first one. Now may God, the Elohim, give you the dew of heaven. Now in Palestine, it doesn't rain all year. It just has a rainy season. And when the rains don't come, the major source of moisture is the dew that condensates in the morning on the plants and on the ground. And it's enough for the crops to grow. So the dew of heaven becomes a metaphor for the blessing of God. Let's see, you might want to see Deuteronomy 30. I believe it's 20. I can't read my own writing. It's either 23 verses 13 and 28 or 33 verses 13 and 28. You can look and see. And the fatness of the earth, that means abundance in agriculture, and the abundance of grain and new wine. Verse 29 now becomes the wider implication going back to the Abrahamic covenant. Many peoples will serve you, and nations will bow down to you. This is kind of a Hebrew poetic form. We've got peoples and nations parallel and serve and bow down parallel. Now, you ought to see this against, of course, the promise of chapter 25, 23. Look at the next one. Be masters of your brothers, and may your mother's son bow down to you. Now, this is parallel, but it's A, B, B, A. And of course, it seems your mother's son bowed down to you. It's almost as if Isaac was saying something negative about Jacob. But he really got tricked. And when he realizes what he had done, he's not so mad at Jacob. But he realized he'd been fighting against God. That's why he's so upset. Now, and curse be on those who curse you, and blessing be on those who bless you. This is very much reflects the Abrahamic covenant of Genesis 12, 1 through 3. And you might want to see the blessings that Abraham gave in Genesis 28, 4, and compare those. All right, now verse 30. And it came about as soon as Isaac had finished blessing Jacob, and Jacob had hardly gone out from the presence of Isaac his father, Esau his brother came in from the field hunting. And when he had made a savory dish, he brought it to his father and said, "Father, let my father..." This is not a compare. It's not as strong a words as Jacob. I bet Jacob was nervous. I heard several commentators say that if it had been them and Isaac had called them over to smell him and feel him, they'd have dropped the food and ran. Well, Jacob was pretty bold, I have to admit. Well, he said, "Get up," and it's the same words Jacob said. So apparently Jacob picked up on Esau's idiomatic speech. And Isaac, his father, said to him, "Who are you?" And he said, "I'm your son, your firstborn Esau." And Isaac trembled greatly. Now in the Hebrew, there's kind of a compound here of words. Trembled with a very great trembling. Now, is he just mad at Jacob for tricking him? Well, I'm sure that was part of it. But I think he realized he had been fighting against God back in chapter 25, 23. And he's going to be so upset that he's not mad at Jacob, because he's going to say, "What I've said, I've said. Who I've blessed, I've blessed." He's going to be very congenial to his son at the beginning of chapter 28. So I think we've got to be careful here to see he's not just mad at Jacob. He's kind of mad at himself and afraid that he had gone against the command of God. "Trembled greatly and said, 'Who was he then that hunted game and brought it to me? So I ate of all of it before you came and blessed him. Yes, and he shall be blessed.'" Oh my. "Now, when Esau heard the words of his father, he cried out with an exceeding great cry and bitter cry." Now, the Septuagint adds a little phrase here that said Isaac was silent. So apparently the silence of Isaac may be. And Esau realized that when he sold his birthright back in 25:25, this was the consequence. Now, Hebrews chapter 12, verse 17, gives us an insight into the motive of Esau. Esau was not sorry that he had lost the birthright and the blessing, but he was sorry of the consequences of his act. And so, I mean, he wasn't sorry for the act, but the consequence. He apparently was concerned material things, and it bothered him. So it was a terribly gut-ripping experience for him. Verse 35, he said, "Your brother came deceitfully and has taken away your blessing." Verse 35, that's only half true. Yes, Jacob did, but it wasn't him that was acting, it was God. And then he said, "Is not he not rightly named Jacob, for he has supplanted me these two times?" Now, the word Jacob there goes back to chapter 25, 26, where Jacob is named. Brown, Driver, and Briggs say it means overreacher. He was grabbing onto to the brother's heel. And that may be true, I think. These two times refer to what? The birthright back in 25, 27 through 34, and the blessing here in chapter 27. They both went together and shouldn't have been separated, but Esau felt tricked these two times. He's even his name implies what he's done for me. "He took away my birthright. Behold, now he's taken away my blessing." In Hebrew, the word birthright and the word blessing are a play on words. They're very similar in sound, and so it's a play. "But Isaac answered and said to Esau, 'Behold, I have made him your master, and all his relatives I have given to him as servants. With grain and new wine I have sustained him. Now as for you then, what shall I do, my son?' And Esau said to his father, 'Do you not have only one blessing, my father? Bless me, even me also, O my father.' So Abraham lifted his voice and wept." What a scene this must have been. "And Isaac his father answered." Now it's not really a blessing, it's a prophecy. Kind of like Genesis 49. He's going to say, "Son, I can't give you anything. I've already given it to Jacob. But I will tell you what's going to happen to your life." That's the kind of idea here. "Behold, now away from the fertility of the ground will be your dwelling, and away from the dew of heaven from above." Now this little word "away from" is the Hebrew word "men." There are two ways to take this. Some say it's the men of source, which means he's blessing Esau just like he blessed Jacob. But I think a better interpretation, it's the men of separation, which is the translation here in the New American Standard Bible, which means away from fertility. It seems to be an antithesis of what he gave to Jacob. And I think that fits the context better. So he's not going to live in a land of fertility, and he's not going to have the dew of heaven. That's the idea. By your sword you shall live, and your brother you shall serve, but it shall come about that when you become restless, that you shall break his yoke from your neck. Now, I think this does fit. As you know, Esau, of course, became the nation of Edom. It's a very high plateau nation, a lot of rocks, but some fertility. And since the time of David, they had always been in subjection to the Jews. Some see this prophecy as saying one day Edom will overcome Israel, and they connect it to Herod ruling over the Jews in Jesus' day. I think that's reading a bit much here. What I think it's going to say is, Jacob and his descendants will be your master, but you'll be always trying to get out from under their control. And there were brief periods where they were out from under the control of Jacob's descendants, but not many. And finally, they were completely destroyed in judgment on the fact that they helped the Babylonians and egged on the Babylonians when the city of Jerusalem fell. And God judged them for that, as you can see so clearly in the book of Obadiah and other of the minor prophets. Now, so Esau bore a grudge against Jacob because of the blessing which his father had blessed him. And Esau said to himself, now apparently he said it to more than just to himself. Now he may have said it to his wives in the presence of servants. Somebody's going to tell Rebekah. I want to tell you, Rebekah's a pretty strong-willed lady in this account, and Isaac comes off a little more meek and mild. So Rebekah is the dominant one, and she's going to hear now what Esau was planning. He said it to himself, but he said it a little bit too loud, if you please. Days of mourning for my father are near. Then I will kill my brother Jacob. Boy, the sin of Cain and Abel hadn't been removed from the human race. And here we have that hatred, that animosity showing up again. The Septuagint, which is, of course, the Greek translation of the Old Testament, done around, tradition says, 250 B.C. by 70 Jewish scholars. We get the word Septuagint from that, for the library at Alexandria, Egypt, which, of course, is the traditional interpretation of the Hebrew Scriptures around that B.C. period before the fight over Jesus comes about. They make verse 41 imply that Esau was wishing and hoping for his father's death so he could kill Jacob. Now, as irony would have it, Isaac lives 40 more years. 40 more years. Jacob, who got the birthright and the blessing, got all the material prosperity and inheritance of his father, has to run away and has to begin a life of servitude to serve for his wife's two wives. So everything he got seemed to be taken away from him. Rebekah is not going to see him anymore. Isn't that something? So what he thought he gained, maybe, he didn't. Now, notice if you would here. Now, when the words of the elder son, Esau, were reported to Rebekah, she went and called her younger son, Jacob, and said to him, "Behold, your brother Esau is consoling himself concerning you by planning to kill you. Now, therefore, my son, obey my voice. Rise and flee to Haran, to my brother Laban, and stay with him a few days." Now, she's just expecting a few days. Listen to this series of words. "Until your brother's fury subsides, until your brother's anger against you subsides, and he forgets what you did to him, then I'll send for you." Now, it seems like she's expecting it to be just a short period, but it wasn't. We never know that she saw her son again that she loved. She's left at home with a crippled old husband who feels betrayed and an older brother who felt betrayed. Oh, my. Now, this first word in verse 44, "for your brother's fury," is from the Hebrew root to be warm or to be hot. In verse 45 is another Hebrew word for the word anger that means to breathe out one's nose. Sometimes my teenage daughter, I can tell her she's mad by the size of her nostrils. Well, Esau was mad by the size of his nostrils. She thought it would pass, But anyway, why should I bereave over you both in one day? That's the end of verse 45. Now, there have been several things implied. Some say Esau, being a hunter, could easily kill Jacob, but then the family Goel would kill Esau, going back to Genesis 9:6. Others say, no, Jacob, you know, he was a pretty strong man himself. He was a herdsman. He's going to wrestle with an angel all night later on in his life. He was a pretty tough fellow himself. Maybe they'd kill each other. And so she didn't want to lose them both. So Rebekah said to Isaac, now this girl's smart. She says, I do not want my own last son to marry another Canaanite wife. Now we learned that Esau had taken two of the Canaanite women. You might want to see Genesis 26, 34, and 35. Now whether they are really giving Rebekah the miseries or not, we don't know. But she used an excuse to say, I want Jacob to marry one of our own family. Send him back to Paddan Aram. And that's exactly what Isaac is going to do. So here we have that whole intrigue here as Sarah again comes into view with one of these subtle plans and knows how to, manipulate her husband in a positive way to get apparently what God wants done. And it happens. Now, Jacob's over 77 years old, hadn't married. Maybe it was good he got away from his mother. Maybe his mother was too domineering. Well, anyway, he got away, and of course, it's really a time of training. God's gonna train him to trust God, gonna train him in a way that he never could have learned in the lap of luxury in the house of Isaac. God worked all this out. Friends, don't you know God's doing that in our lives too? I want to tell you one of the neat things is when the book of 1 Corinthians, I believe chapter 10, tells us that all this was written for us. It's just not recorded for history. God's control of our life. God has a plan for us. God wants our best. And you know what? Sometimes what looks like to the eye of the beholder, problems, turmoil, crisis, God's using that. Friends, you just can't read this part of Genesis and not know that God's involved in the trials these men went through for His glory and purpose. That's true of your life. Jacob needed a time of training. He had a tendency toward trickery. God's going to have to break that. God will do it. He has a tendency toward maybe material things. God will break that. He has a tendency toward wanting to stay at home. God will break that. God will make him the man he ought to be. It's going to take a long time. I like that statement that says, be patient with me. God's not through with me yet. That's true of Jacob. That's true of all of us. Well, I hope you'll read these with the view in mind, what is this saying to me in my day, after you fully understand what the author is trying to record for us. I've enjoyed being with you. I'll see you again, same time, same place, next week. God bless you.